case of the frozen pussy, slip or trip, the $1 million fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will find on the Miami Memoirs podcast. Strange Cases and Wild Tales presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of a creative Florida attorney reaching out over 60 years. There's more than meets the eye. In these sparkling memoirs, Florida attorney Louis Ress uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. Before we begin, I would like to tell you about a new book from Louis. Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring, Round 2 from the Amazing Life and Times of Legendary South Florida Attorney Louis Ress, takes readers from Brooklyn in the 1940s, via a spell in a top-secret army department, and a transatlantic solo flight in a replica Spirit of St. Louis, to adventures in and out of the courtroom in a sometimes rougher-than-ready 50s and 60s Miami. The book is available on Amazon, just search Louis Ress. And now let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Louis Ress. I'm Jeanette, your host, and today we'll be doing episode 33, Hullover Pier. Hullover Pier, what's all that about? I know that's a location, but...
A Hullover Pier is stretches into the Atlantic Ocean in Miami Beach at about 163rd Street. And it goes, projects out into the ocean from Collins Avenue area.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I call the story Hullover Pier, it's about psychopaths.
Oh, okay.
It's about a story involving an incident that allegedly occurred on Hullover Pier.
Oh.
And
I'm intrigued.
It's about psychiatrically disturbed people.
Hmm.
Here's how it all started. The judge's personal secretary was calling me. She says, "The judge wants you in his chambers immediately." Uh-oh. What is it now?
Yeah.
It was the same judge who had recently ruled in my client's favor in a hotly contested workers' compensation case, which I had defended. The claimant, the injured worker, had just lost her appeal. So I had won the case, and she had taken an appeal and lost it. Maybe there was a loose end or two that the judge wanted me to clean up, you know, to the record or something. So I went down to his office immediately. And as I parked my car in front of the Florida State Office building, it dawned on me that there might be more than a clerical problem. But what could it be? It was a clear, clean case. I had won it with convincing testimony. I don't know. I don't know what it could be.
Huh.
I entered the judge's private office. We call them chambers for some reason. Mm-hmm. I entered his chambers, and the judge said, "Sit down, Mr. Ress." And he gave me a strange look. He was a judge of industrial claims. His name was Sam Mandel. And he peered at me again out over a cluttered desk. He had his glasses down on his nose, and he was leaning over, peering over his glasses. There were about 10 or 12 knickknacks out there on his desk, a broken chess piece, some paperweights, a letter opener that had been made out of a small military ammunition shell. And Judge Mandel was playing with them, and he was overweight and balding.
Hmm.
But at one time, he had been a slim combat infantryman in the Battle of the Bulge. I knew this because there was a bronze star on the wall with a plaque. I told you everyone in the Battle of the Bulge got a bronze
star.
Got
one, yeah. I have a foreboding feeling about this, Louis.
Yeah, so did I. The judge giving me strange looks. He gives me another strange look. He says, "Mr. Ress, you have a major problem," pointing his finger at me.
Uh-oh.
I said, I looked at him. He said, "The claimant in the case that you just won, Mrs. Frank, has filed a complaint against you. She says that you pushed her off the Hullover Beach Pier."
What?
"And that she fell 20 feet into the ocean."
Oh, goodness.
"And her friend, Mandy Freed, signed a statement and says that she was there and saw the whole thing. And evidently, it was as a result of an argument you had with Miss Frank about her lying in her workers' compensation case. You met them on the pier. You told Miss Frank that she was a damnable liar. And then a pushing match started. And you pushed Mrs. Frank over the rail. And she's assigned a complaint. And it's confirmed by her witness. I have it here, and I'm about to refer it to the state's attorney's office as well as the Florida bar. And the complaint she filed is verified. It's notarized. It's sworn to."
My goodness.
He says, you better know where you were. I said, I felt pins and needles come out all over me, in my chest, in my arms, my fingers.
I'm sure you felt horrible.
Your Honor, that's insane. I've never even seen Miss Frank since the day of the hearings. I don't know where she is or who she is, where she lives. And I where did she say this occurred? He said, it's right here in the affidavit, June 21st at 3 in the afternoon. I said, thank you, Judge. This whole thing is a big lie. He said, Mr. Rez, she's got a witness, and you had better be able to account for your time on June 21st at 3 p.m.
That's crazy. That's absolutely insane, Lewis. What'd you do?
Well, I soiled my pants. I knew it was a crazy woman trying to seek revenge. But what can I do? If I was out jogging or in the office or driving my car, it would be tough for me to prove that I could not have been at the Haulover Pier on the 21st of June.
Right.
The first thing I did was to look at my calendar. Believe it or not, I was in Jacksonville, 400 miles away on June 21st, negotiating with the Florida Special Disability Fund. My Eastern Airline ticket showed my arrival in Jacksonville at 8 a.m. and my return flight at 6:15 p.m. And Don Harrington, the fund administrator, immediately sent me confirmation of our settlement discussions in Jacksonville on June 21st, lasting until 4:30 p.m.
Perfect. Well, you had your alibi.
Well, of course, that was the end of that. But Mrs. Frank never apologized, and the judge never charged her with anything.
Huh.
She signed a sworn complaint.
That's crazy.
Right.
What a story.
It is. It is. And so these are psychopaths.
Yeah. She made the whole thing up.
I call the next story Gladys.
And oh, boy. Here we go, Gladys.
I was with Dr. Krasny last night, only last night. He is now in his 90s.
Oh, that's great.
He's 95 years old. And he's a little bit senile, but not bad. Anyhow, here's the story about Gladys. My friend, the dentist, and my client, Buddy Krasny, owned a small office building in North Miami along on 125th Street, along with his brother, Alvin. They called it the Madison Building, as a matter of fact, instead of Madison. It's a joke. Anyhow, they were the only truly honest dentists in the area. They didn't try to sell you a total mouth rehabilitation at $5,000 when the patient really just needed a few cavities filled. There were about five or six tenants in the building. One of the major tenants on the ground floor was Alfred May, an MD, with a general practice. Dr. May was a little weird, but his wife Gladys was wacky. She would visit her husband's office daily, and they would argue and yell at one another, disturbing the other tenants. Gladys would plop herself down on the floor in the hallway inside the building near the entrance and wouldn't get up. She would shout. She would sometimes scream. She was disheveled. Her hair was uncombed. She was unwashed. And above all, she clearly was stoned.
Wow. And what could Dr. Krasny do?
He had to call the police. And he had to call the police more than once. And he had to have her removed. It was a few days after one of these events when the police served Buddy Krasny with a criminal complaint, charging him with attempted manslaughter with a motor vehicle and assault and battery with a motor vehicle and intentionally running over Gladys May.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is wild. The criminal complaint stated that Dr. Lawrence Buddy Krasny was driving his car in the parking lot behind the office building when Mrs. May came out of the building and was crossing the driveway in the back. It stated that Dr. Krasny knowingly, maliciously, and intentionally drove his car into and over Mrs. May, and after rolling over her, put his car in reverse and backed over her prone body in an attempt to kill her.
Oh, my goodness. That is savage. It's crazy.
It's wild.
Oh.
At first, Dr. Krasny thought it was a joke and it was laughable. He called me up and sort of flippantly said, hey, Lewis, please take care of this for me.
Huh.
However, Dr. Krasny soon learned that it wasn't a joke.
No.
And it would be his word against Gladys Mays. The case was assigned to Judge Henry Balaban. Well, Buddy Krasny played tennis with the judge, and he immediately disqualified himself.
Mm-hmm.
The next judge was George Schultz, who was a friend of the Krasny brothers. He also recused himself. The next judge was Milton Friedman, who was also a friend, so he was out. It was so ludicrous that each one of the judges had to get a joke or a jab at Buddy. Buddy, you really should drive more carefully and stop trying to kill your tenants. That was George Shultz. Judge Balaban also got in a jab. Buddy, how could you do something so terrible?
And what finally happened out of everything? Like, did we find out what happened? Or
we finally got a judge that didn't know Buddy Krasny. And I started to worry about the case. Buddy was a kind, happy fellow. He would make jokes and kid around. And Gladys May was nuts and could say anything. She had been the mistress of Diego Rivera, and he had painted her portrait in oils. She was weird, wild, bombed half the time, and totally unpredictable. And as it turns out, Buddy, in fact, actually was in the parking lot driving his car at the time, and Gladys May was in the same parking lot at the same time. Her husband, Alfred May, who was also weird, had been treating her for a tendon tear and a dislocation of her right shoulder, which they claimed was related to the assault. And she had a sling on her right arm and right shoulder. She produced clothes that were dirty and grimy, and the dirt came from the surface of the parking lot. Dr. Krasny, of course, denied the entire claim. She also had her housekeeper testify that she was a witness to it.
Oh, my goodness.
This was another one of the girlfriends becoming a witness.
Yeah.
And which concerns me about the people conspiring to damage other people, psychopaths.
Yeah. Well, it seems like she definitely manufactured evidence.
Right, right. Also, I could see a case for negligence and for punitive damage civilly coming at us, civil suit. Well, the case went to a non-jury preliminary hearing in front of the judge. And my associate, my secretary, and I accompanied Dr. Krasny to the courtroom. I was more worried about the outcome than he. I think it was dawning on him that this was really not a joke. And the judge was going to take her seriously. And she had a witness. And she had the dress.
Yeah.
Well, Gladys appeared in court looking a bit glazy-eyed. And eventually, with a slurred speech, told her story. But you could tell she was bombed.
Yeah.
I cross-examined her, and I noticed that she was wearing the sling on her left arm and shoulder and not the right arm.
Whoops.
I said, Mrs. May, I thought you injured your right arm and shoulder, yet you're wearing your sling on your left arm and shoulder. She said, oh, I just forgot this morning and put it on the wrong arm. The judge got the idea very fast. She was nuts. Case dismissed. Buddy Krasny loves me. And I just saw him last night. This was maybe 20 years ago.
Wow.
I saw him last night, and he's doing fine.
Did you reminisce on the story together?
As a matter of fact, we did. We did, and we talked about the story, and I forgot that I was going to use it today.
Oh, look at that.
Okay.
Very nice. Oh, that's crazy.
Here's story number three.
Oh, we got another one. Yeah, that's here.
And this story is called I Swear It. There's another nut.
Let's
my client was in the restaurant business in New York City, and he had sold John and Mary Martin $50,000 worth of used equipment, which John had shipped to Miami, and he started a restaurant. John had paid the promissory notes, securing the balance of $30,000 down to $10,000, and then he defaulted. So he had paid $20,000 of it. The restaurant that he formed went under, as so many new restaurants tend to do.
Yep.
My client, Acme Restaurant Supply Company, had written the $10,000 off. But in those days, I was starting up a practice. I was young. I was practicing on a card table. And I was attempting to salvage anything that I could for Acme. And I had to collect from Mr. and Mrs. Martin. After getting no response from my letters suggesting a workout, I filed suit on the notes and for attorney's fees and costs. The Martins didn't appear or contest the lawsuit, so I obtained a judgment for $10,000 plus $2,000 in attorney's fees and $250 in costs. When I finally contacted Mr. Martin, he was quite tough. He said, I went down, and I have nothing to pay Acme back with. They can afford to take the loss. They can go take a leap, and you'll never get anything from me or my wife. We have nothing. We have no assets. You're wasting your time. Stop bothering us.
Wow, he sounds like a tough guy.
Well, he was, and I really didn't like him. He was a smart aleck. Mm-hmm. He was, but he was right. I couldn't find any assets on which to levy. They were judgment proof. So I recorded the judgment with the county clerk and I waited. About 3 or 4 months later, I was scanning the legal newspaper, mm-hmm. the Daily Law Review, for new lawsuits filed. I used to check to see who was filing the lawsuit. And lo and behold, John and Mary Martin had filed a lawsuit for injuries sustained by Mrs. Martin in an automobile accident. Copies of the lawsuit showed the names of their attorney and counsel for the insurance company. The defense lawyer had no love for Mr. and Mrs. Martin. And as the case progressed, he kept me updated. And when the case was settled for $20,000, he told me when the check would be sent to the Martin's attorney's office. So I had the sheriff levy on the attorney's trust account. And the court froze all of the settlement funds, including the attorney's fee.
Oh, you got him.
Yep, I got him. So Mr. Martin appeared in my office. He dropped to his knees in front of my desk. And he said, boy, was he contrite. Mr. Ress, sir, I beg you in God's name. My wife is injured and needs the settlement money to pay her medical bills. My lawyer is threatening to sue me. Please, please, I promise in God's name. I promise and I swear to make all of the payments. I swear in God's name that I will make everything. I will pay everything. Please help me.
And what'd you do after hearing that?
Well, he was on his knees invoking God's name.
Mm-hmm.
So there were two phone calls to make. The first was to Acme. And they said they had written the entire balance off their taxes. They preferred not to show the income and to do whatever I wanted. They would be thrilled to get half. Then I called the rabbi. I said, Rabbi Wallach, this man is invoking God's name and asking for mercy. But I don't believe him. He's a mean, nasty, bad guy. So the rabbi spoke. He said, Lewis, if he's invoking God's name, you must have faith that he will keep his word. So I went back to my office and I spoke to Mr. Martin. I said, you know, you owe $13,000 all told. This includes some interest. I will release $6,500 or half of it from the levy on your attorney's trust account, and I will keep an equal amount. But you must sign a note and keep your promise to pay the balance of $6,500. I've gone out on a limb for you. The only reason we are willing to do this is that you invoke God's name and you have sworn to pay back the $6,500 balance in 6 equal monthly payments. He looked at me right in the eye and he said, I swear I will. I never heard from John Martin again.
Oh, oh wow.
So here we are.
Mm-hmm.
What did we learn from all
what
this?
Did we learn? 3 great stories.
Well, you learn a lot. First of all, there are a lot of sick, demented, psychopathic people out there.
Yeah.
It's being a psychopath, that's not an official diagnosis. I don't think I was looking. They have a book, psychiatrist. Have a book where they tell you, they diagnose, it's a diagnostic volume. I'm trying to think of the name of an MSIP or
something.
I think
it's a DSM?
Hmm?
The DSM, I think. A diagnosis
on Yeah, DSM. I think I have one right there. It is DSM-3R, right behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't think being a psychopath is an official diagnosis. But it's really a callous, unemotional, morally depraved person. So you look at Mr. Martin, Gladys, Miss Frank. These are crazy people that have no compunction about making a sworn complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And lying. They cannot differentiate between the truth and a lie. It's a behavioral illness.
They'll do whatever they want to get what
lying,
they want.
Stealing, robbing, physical aggression, rape, murder, bullying, threats, drug addiction. These are all parts. And a lot of people, and I'll talk about the really psychiatric problems. It's very prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them have combinations.
Right.
It's like being in an accident. You don't just fracture one bone. You may have 3 fractures.
Exactly.
So each fracture being a different diagnostic condition. So they have no concept between truthfulness and lies. They have no concept between what's lawful and what's illegal. They don't know what's right and wrong. They don't know the difference between good and bad. They don't know the difference between kind and mean. They don't know what's moral or immoral. So they can kill without remorse. They can deny science. They can tell you that in math, 2 + 2 = 5. And if you don't believe it, then you're sick, then you're crazy. Their cult believes it. Mm-hmm. And there's people out there all over the place nowadays that are doing that. They don't believe science.
Yeah.
And it's
and then they spread that that belief to other people.
Right. Yeah. You ever hear the people who think the world is flat?
Uh-huh.
You don't hear so much about them anymore. It used to be, well, you know, stand on the beach and look, you'll see that it's flat.
I guess they've never been on an airplane before.
Well, that was.
You can see the curvature
right.
of the earth.
Know. They don't want to hear that. That's irrelevant. That's a distortion. The atmosphere distorts the light. You know that mental disorders are as commonplace as a fractured limb.
That is crazy.
How many people do you think have mental disorders? I keep repeating this and repeating
percent?
It. There are three studies that I can
in the U.S.
Give you. Yeah.
65.
No, 26.2%. I mean, when you go driving your car, think that one in every five drivers is crazy.
Yeah.
The National Academy of Sciences, the National Research Council, the National Comorbidity Survey, the American Psychiatric Association, the Johns Hopkins Study, and the World Health Organization have all issued reports on this very matter, the percentage of psychiatric disability. Well, it's now up to 33 1/3%. The old one studies were in 1997, and the new one was in 2005.
Oh, who and knows where it's at now?
Yeah, it's even probably higher.
Yeah.
And the MEB is called Mental, Emotional, and Behavioral Disorder. They said 57% of the people who are sick have more than one disorder.
And what are some of the common ones?
Oh, by the way, they now have the DSM-4.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to 1994. They're going to come out with the 5.
Yeah, DSM-5, yeah.
Hmm?
The DSM-5, yeah, that's the latest one.
Yeah.
And what are the top ones? Do you happen to know?
Well, they have disruptive behavior, anxiety, post-traumatic stress has been added, the drug abuse, drug dependency, schizophrenia, bipolar is very big. That's one of the biggest ones, the high-low moods.
Mm-hmm.
Schizophrenia, you know, is delusions, where you think you have special powers. People are out to get you, hallucinations, differences in seeing, feeling, smelling, abnormalities, disorganized thinking, and speech and behavioral confusion, short-temperedness, inability to concentrate, sleep problems. Those are some of the just the symptoms of schizophrenia, which is very common. Obsessive compulsive disorder, that's another big one. Now there's depression, that's a very big one.
Yeah, but now, these would be psychological disorders, not necessarily psychopathic.
Well, right? They're psychopathic too. These are actually in the DSM.
Yeah, but those are just psychological mental disorders. It doesn't mean a person is a psychopath because they suffer from depression.
No,
right?
No.
There's
no,
a difference.
No. Oh,
yeah.
There's all kinds of depression. It's mild, it's moderate, and severe. And so, and when it's linked with something else, then you have to be concerned. Depression could be coming from bipolar.
Right.
So you have to know. Then there's narcissistic personality disorder. And again, I don't want to mention names. This is someone that has an inflated idea of self-needs and attention from others, is selfish and self-absorbed. So that ought to tell you something.
Yeah, we all know at least one person.
And this crosses racial, ethnic, socioeconomic lines. And it crosses the entire society. That means educational, that means economic, that means social. and that means gender. And it's generally, it's 33 1/3%. So 1/3 of everybody is in need of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, the criteria.
Mm-hmm.
The test is, are they disturbed enough to need treatment?
Where they can't function in their daily
33
life.
33 1/3% of the people need treatment.
Wow.
And half of those need to be in the hospital, and about 10% of them are dangerous.
And some need to be medicated to be able, like schizophrenics, for example.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, you have ASPD. You know what that is? That's antisocial personality disorder.
Huh.
That's mm-hmm. A lot of them have that. This is socially irresponsible behavior. That ought to ring a bell for you. And it's disregarding or violating the rights of others. Hmm. That ought to ring a bell for you. Inability to distinguish right and wrong. Difficulty in showing remorse or empathy. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Tendency to lie often? Ooh, that rang a bell. Manipulating and hurting others? Uh-huh. Recurring problems with the law? General disregard towards safety and responsibility? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talk about homeless people, because nobody understands or talks about the real problem with homeless people. Homeless people, the real problem is that they are psychiatrically, emotionally disturbed people in general.
Mm.
The huge amount of them, maybe 80% of them,
mm-hmm.
They suffer from depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, anxiety, drug addiction, substance abuse. So what did we used to do? Well, we used to have psychiatric hospitals. They were very expensive to maintain.
Hmm.
And we decided because of pharmacology that we could treat them with medication
mm-hmm.
and then have to keep them incarcerated. Oh, we can close with the nurses and the doctors and the insurance and the treatments.
Mm-hmm.
We close all these places. We'll save hundreds of billions of dollars. And what do we do with the money? Oh, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was used up immediately for pet projects for the politicians. That's gone.
Wow.
And what happened with the homeless people? Well, they don't take their medication. They're sick. I mean, if they needed if they were able to take medication, they would need hospitalization. So when you take them out of the hospital, there's no basis to think that they're going to take the medication. You can't come every day to force them to take it.
Right.
In the hospital, you can. So it's a big problem, and they're out on the streets without medication. They have personality disorders also, which cannot be treated with medication.
Hmm.
So they shouldn't be out. They shouldn't be out in the street. What else can I tell you? Oh, I talked about the plagues and stuff, being treated, people refusing to be treated. So do you know the worst ones, the worst plagues, the worst, what do you call it now, the pandemics
mm-hmm.
that we had?
I'm
you think
guessing
this was the worst? It's not by far.
Ebola.
Ebola is good. It's on the list, but it's down a ways. It's down near leprosy. Try
leprosy.
The bubonic plague.
Oh, yeah.
The bubonic plague was the worst. And wiped out, I think, a huge percentage of the European population,
yeah.
Like 50% or something. Huge. Then there's smallpox. That
smallpox.
Wiped out Africa and stuff. Oh, that was in England. It was terrible all over the body with the scars that left. SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome. That's another one. And flu. The avian influenza or flu, that was another killer.
Mm-hmm.
So those were all terrible things. And now we have to go back to treating it. And part of the psychiatric problem is people with psychiatric problems tend not to want to be treated for inoculations.
Hmm.
They're very difficult patients. Okay. What else we talk about? I didn't tell you about lying.
Hmm.
I am a big advocate of the lie detector test. So everyone,
you
know, they're lying in court. You know, you take a woman like Gladys
uh-huh.
May. The judge should be able to have her take a lie detector test. And they can cross-examine about it and everything about its accuracy. But a lie detector test costs around $200 up to $2,000, but usually $200.
Okay.
And it's 80 to 90% accurate.
Yeah, it's pretty
so
close.
So that if you pass it, it should help you. You don't take it to convict. You take it to exonerate.
Hmm.
I would say that it's a valid test.
And do you think there are people who have the capability to, like, lie and, like, cheat off of it? Like, lie straight up and get away with it?
No, it's hard to fake. No, it's very hard to fake. People say, oh, you can train to take it. They train spies to take it. That's nonsense. Hmm. It's not true. Hmm. And, in fact, the CIA tests its spies very often through lie detector tests.
Hmm.
They suggest, employers can have you take the test, which is really where it's helpful.
Yeah.
Let's say you work in a bank or you work in a manufacturing place with a diamond mine. You want to make sure that they haven't engaged in any illegal behavior or stealing or that they're not taking drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So the employees have to take the test. CIA makes its employees take the test.
Yeah.
And there's a component now of the test that nobody knows about that I'll tell you about that makes the test about 97 to 99% accurate.
Oh, wow.
Supposedly. Now, I don't know that that's a true assessment, but that's what I'm told, what my research shows. How does that happen? It's called eye detection.
Eye detection.
And, you know, they watch the eyes, the pupils of the eyes dilate or not dilate, the eye movements. And they can track just like the blood pressure. they connect your eye movements to the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, you can tell when somebody is lying by how their eyes work.
Wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah. It's a wonderful machine. Also, I'm going to tell you another story quickly, and then we'll end it. The courts can become a tool for crazy people.
How?
And it's called pro se. You can go into court and write on a blank piece of paper, I hate John Smith, and he stole $500 from me or $5 million from me, and he attacked me. Sign your name and file it in federal court. And that's a good file record. You can write anything.
Wow.
And the court, if the court can construe it as a complaint, it's good.
Huh.
Now, you can't do that in state court. It's got to follow certain criteria.
Mm.
But in federal court, you can state a claim. It's called stating a claim. So these people go in and they sue. And there was one fellow, an attorney friend of mine. I won't tell you his last name. His first name was Arno. Everyone knows Arno. Now, Arno offended a lady of some kind, a crazy lady. And she spent maybe 10 years suing him in federal court until finally the federal judge issued an order saying she can't go into court anymore.
Oh, wow.
He deprived her of going into court. And he says, if you come into court one more time with a phony claim, you'll be subject to criminal prosecution and punishment, civil sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
So that stopped her finally. But my poor friend Arno was living with this crazy woman, suing him all the time.
Yeah, it's rough.
Does that help you with the crazies?
Yeah, it's a wild world out there.
Right.
Thank you, Lewis.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Miami Memoirs, and be sure to pick up a copy of Lewis Rest's new book on Amazon.